You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
Happy Easter. Are you guys well? You guys need to wake up. There's coffee in the back. If you need some more, feel free to get up. We'll get the coffee back out. But it's Easter Sunday, and we're so excited that we are here to worship and celebrate together. My name is Derek, if we've never met, and I'm so glad that we can celebrate this day together. You know, Easter is really a strange holiday. It's a weird thing, and for many of us, it means many different things. Right, for many of you, it's simply a day where your family gets back together. You're not quite sure why, but you get together with family. Maybe you brunch, maybe you go to church. But for many of you, Easter is maybe a chance for spring cleaning. It's like a reminder. It's on the clock. Easter, I got to clean the house. For many of you, Easter is simply chocolate bunnies and mini Cadbury eggs because they are Easter in the full. The dark chocolate ones especially. But it's this weird holiday. It's this weird mashup where bunnies lay eggs, which is weird. There's fake grass involved and peeps, which are the most disgusting thing unless you put them over fire and put them in a s'more. Then they're delicious. But Easter is this weird connection of different traditions and memories. For many of us, Easter is a celebration. You grasp the weight, the fullness of what Jesus did when he died and conquered the grave. But for many of you, many of us in this room, Easter is not a celebration. It's really an investigation. See, because it's peculiar. It's strange. It's intriguing. And to be honest, at times it's so difficult to believe. Life after death. But what Easter is, it's the celebration. It's the story of a good God who loves us, who designed us and built us as objects of his love. And our separation came through our own sin, but God, since then, has been on a rescue mission, trying to reconcile us to himself, trying to connect us with him. In all of human history, there is evidence of God pursuing us, evidence of God coming to grab us and get us back to where he meant us to be. But 2,000 years ago, God delivered on his final plan, the plan that would redeem us, that would reconcile us. And it was when he stepped down himself into human history, lived a perfect and sinless life, and then went to the cross, an innocent person. And there's so much meaning packed into the story of the cross. There's so much meaning and metaphor and beauty. There's layer upon layer upon layer of what happened on Easter. That Jesus would be the perfect lamb that was slain for us. And this is metaphor. This is referring to what used to be required to be made right with God, to be atoned, to close the gap between us and God. A sacrifice would be required. But the difference that God made in this moment is that no longer would we have to go make sacrifices on our own, but that there would be one sacrifice that would last forever. And there's all kinds of even crazy language around blood that cleanses us, which doesn't make sense. There's crazy language around death and resurrection, but at the end of the day, no matter what degree you understand this or grasp this, no matter what degree you can comprehend this, the end of the day, the most simple, basic way to understand what this transaction is about, this way that God came for us, the most simplest way to understand it is that it's a gift. It's a gift. It is a gift that we do not deserve, but is made available to all of us. And the interesting thing about a gift is that a gift requires a recipient. A gift requires someone to receive it. And it seems like if a gift is free, that it wouldn't cost us anything, but many times to receive something, you've got to make room for it in your life. And so this morning, I want to talk about what it would look like for us to receive this gift. Any Macintosh users in the house? All right. Anyone else use any other weird thing? couple of you. Yeah, I've been a Macintosh user for a long time. And I remember I was a PC guy because the one button really messed with me. I needed two buttons. You know, but once I figured out how one button worked on a Mac, it was life-changing. If there's anything that's almost as revolutionary as salvation, it's becoming a Mac user. And it really did change my life. Thank you, Steve Jobs. And I'm going to say I'm pretty proficient as a Mac user. I'm pretty good. I know my way around a Mac, which is interesting because professionally I'm a fireman. I really shouldn't be a computer guy, but this church thing and that requires me to use a computer. And so I'm pretty proficient, but there's one thing that I'm really bad at with my Mac, one thing that I'm awful at doing. And I use my computer almost every day. I use my phone every minute, ask my wife. And all the time, at least once or twice a day, there's a little message that comes up on the right corner of my screen. And sometimes I don't even realize it's there because I've gotten so used to it. But it says, we have updates for you. It's like flashing its goodness in your face. It's like, I want to make your life better. I want to make you more productive. Essentially, what this is saying is that there is something in your system that is broken. There's something that is corrupt, something that needs to be updated, something that needs to be fixed. And I want to help you. But I love that Mac is so gentle enough to give you the choice. They don't force it on you. They don't make you just update on your own, which I wish they would. My life would be so much better. Because without even thinking about it, I never click install now. Ever. Subconsciously, unconsciously, I just reach right up in that corner and I just go, remind me later. Remind me later. And then I spend the rest of my day frustrated that my computer is running so slow. So mad that it isn't doing what I want it to do. So mad that it's just taking forever to do what I want it to do. Part of the reason is because I'm a great multitasker and I have about 4,000 windows open at once. This is literally a screenshot of my screen as I was preparing this message. And I got a lot going on, and I'm so good at it. I'm such a great multitasker. I know where everything is. I love these shortcuts where you can kind of remind yourself of how crazy you are. You just see all the windows that are open at once. But the crazy thing is I never click install now, and I never really thought about why. Like, why wouldn't I want to improve my life? Why wouldn't I want to improve the efficiency of my machine? Why wouldn't I want to make things better? If something was broken, why wouldn't I want to fix it? And the reality is, the reason I never hit restart now or install now is because an install requires a restart. Right? If you could just update it by itself and keep all of my stuff in its place, I would update all the time. But that's not how it works. See, an update, it requires a restart. And I never want to restart because I don't want to lose what I've got. I don't want to lose where I'm at. I don't want to lose my sense of myself. As chaotic as it is, I know me. I know where all my windows are. My screen is so bad that even when I look at my desktop, there are so many things on it. There's layers. I have to move stuff out of the way to get to something, but I know where it's at. And the crazy thing is not only am I like so against updating, I'll stay stuck because I'm that defiant. You ever get that spinning beach ball of death? I'll just wait. I even know the shortcuts, 3 keys, boom. Not responding. I'll be like, I'm waiting. Let's see who wins this battle. You know who loses every single time? That'd be me. But I'm so reluctant because I don't want to restart. The funny thing is, with a Mac these days, you don't even lose your work. It auto recovers, it saves everything for you, but there's just something about not wanting to restart that gets at me. Install now or remind me later. The funny part is if you don't respond to that invitation, it will actually force itself on you by just timing out and crashing. No joke, as I was preparing this message, this is happening to me. And my computer just completely stalled out, and I had to restart it. I had to make any more progress. The irony is maybe it's just me, but we're reluctant to restart and update even when we know it will make us better. We know for sure it will get better. We're still reluctant. And I feel like there are all these things. Let's not even get spiritual for the moment. Let's just talk about all of these things for our life that we know make us better, these updates that would enhance our lives, but we don't do them, right? For me, sleep. We know it makes us better. That's the restart, natural restart. Sleep. I don't got time to sleep. I say it all the time. I'll sleep when I'm dead. I know that sleep makes me better, but I just resist it. And then I'm mad at my kids because they resist it. They just take after me. Kids is one of those things will make you better. Kids will make you learn how to love. Kids will learn how to grow your patience. Kids are good for your soul. Ultimately, but it's easy to forget. Easy to forget. There's other things in life that are good for us, like working out. We know it's good for us, but I'll install that later. Good food. I saw this great saying. It says, make food your medicine, or medicine will become your food. We all know that. But watch me eat a whole plate of cookies. We should be serving carrots on Sunday morning, not donuts. Come on. There's all these things in our life that will make us better. But for some reason, we just make it wait. I'll get to that. It'll come around. I love it. We even lie to ourselves. Remind me tonight. I love how it gives you that option. Remind me tonight. And then it's like, remind me in the morning. Remind me tomorrow. I will get to it. But see, why is it that we are so reluctant? I think it's because we know that what's good for us will often come as an interruption to our current situation. See, what's good for us will often come as an interruption to our current situation. And even though we are dissatisfied with our current situation, we know it. We're comfortable with it. We stay in it, well, because the next thing we're not quite sure of, and we're sure of this, and even though we're sure that this is unsatisfying, even though that we're sure that this is not life-giving, we'll keep it, because if we know we've got it, we know what to expect. But the unexpected, I don't know what a snow leopard is. I don't know what a mountain lion means. Yosemite, I like it in person, but I don't know if I want it on my computer. We just don't know. And so we stay stuck. Perhaps it's because we know the cost of change. See, oftentimes we don't want to restart because we're afraid we're going to lose what we've got, even though we know what we've got has us stuck. And you know what's annoying is that little beach ball? The reminder that if you don't install now, eventually it will make you. The little beach ball. Why did they pick a beach ball? Beach ball is about like fun. Let's go to the beach, have a great time. And then it's just this reminder that your life is over. It's like, you gotta go. It's got to go. See, I think we know that if we close all the windows out, if we close that door, or we walk away from that thing, or we close that opportunity, or say no to that. I think we know that at a gut level, if we do that, we think we'll never get back to what we had. And we pick what we have over what we can have. We pick what we have over what we can. Have you ever heard that saying, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush? You ever heard that? I hate that saying. What if the bird you have in your hand is ugly? Or the bird that you have in your hand is like not doing much for you. You want to teach it how to talk, it ain't talking. You want to teach that parrot how to sing, it ain't singing. Like the crazy thing is that we'd rather keep what we have instead of step into what we can have. Why would we be settled with one bird if there's two over there that we could go and get? Well, what if we actually need two birds? What if they're carrier pigeons and we got two messages to send? Well, what if we actually don't need just a bird? What if we don't need a bird at all? What if we actually need the bush? Maybe the bush is more helpful to our lives. Why is it that we're willing to keep what we have instead of step into what we can have? Move from being dissatisfied with the life we have instead of stepping into a life that is full and satisfying. The reality is that if you want to step into a life that is more, you've got to be willing to risk what you have. That's what hope is really all about. Hope is about believing. It isn't about but just believing that there's a better future or a better way. It isn't just about believing that there's something out there that is going to make your life different. It's knowing it's there. Knowing that it's there. That knowing that it's there moves us to action. It lets us release that one bird and go after the two. If what you've got is less than what you can get, then you've got to get rid of what you got. If what you've got is less than what you can get, then you've got to be willing to get rid of what you've got. There's a passage in 2 Peter 2:19. It says that people are slaves to whatever has mastered them. Isn't it true that we are just mastered by so many things? I quite frankly am mastered by the chaos on my computer screen. Busyness masters me. We are mastered by addictions, hurt, jealousy. We are mastered by unforgiveness and grudges. We are mastered by things that stay rooted in us as long as we are unwilling to update now, as long as we are unwilling to restart. These things will be our masters. The verse goes on to say, it would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than to have known it and then turn their backs on the sacred command that was passed on to them. I love that the scriptures are saying, like, you would have been better off if the update notification never came. Like, if you didn't know your machine was slow, if you didn't know that you were stuck, if you didn't know that things were corrupt, that things were broken, if you didn't know it, you wouldn't know. You don't know what you don't know. But once that notification slides from the right side of your screen into reality, you all of a sudden know something. Now you know. You know what the worst part of knowing is? You can't unknow what you know. You can't unknow it. Even if you click remind me later and your machine starts to act up, you know that you should have just clicked install now. Now for the life of me, I can't figure out how to get that thing to pop up when I want it to pop up. So you can't unknow what you know. And while it's true that you can't unknow what you know, you can dismiss what you know. You can actually just reach up and say, dismiss. I'll get to it later. The scriptures say it's better for you to have never known the goodness, never known the righteousness that is offered to us. It is better to have never known it than to have known it and turned against it. To have known it and dismissed it. What do we do with that? I think back to so many different moments in my lives where there's something that I just knew. You ever know it? You know? You just know, but you don't do it. I remember when I was in college and I was young and in love with someone else that wasn't my girlfriend. Did you catch that? No, really, I had a girlfriend in college, and she was a great girl, amazing. Really, really sweet, great family. And she was just fantastic, great for someone else. I knew she wasn't like gonna be my forever girlfriend, but I just stayed with her. I knew. But it was easy, and she was nice, and we had fun, and it was great. So we just went along. And then all of a sudden, another girl came around. I know you guys are thinking, you dirty guy, you player. But see, the reality is like, when my wife, Laurel, came around, even though I had a girlfriend, I was like, I had broken up with her like a year prior. And so I was disengaged. And even though I knew that we weren't going to be together, I stayed with it. And when you dismiss things like that, it actually makes things worse and more difficult. See, because the longer I stayed with her, she was more and more convinced that we were going to get married and have a life happily ever after. And so when it came time to actually break up with that girlfriend, who, by the way, was an amazing woman, I had put her through more pain than she deserved. And in fact, her pain caused me more pain. It was more distraught and more dissatisfying and more clumsy than it could have been if I just would have done what I knew when I knew it. See, the delay in doing what you know you need to do, it will bring you through a crucible. It will bring you through some pain that is absolutely unnecessary. I wasted my time, I wasted her time, I hurt her more than she deserved to be hurt. And when we hurt people, they can recover, but it leaves a mark. See, when we delay in doing what we know, it actually puts you through a process that is unnecessary, that you could have avoided all in all together. And I love how the scriptures say, it's better to have never known than to have known and turned away. See, there are moments in our lives where God is trying to get our attention. See, maybe you never knew of God, but now you know. Maybe you never knew of the goodness of the life that God is offering you, but now you know. And you know that there are things that are good for you. You know that there are updates in your life. There are things that you should install and restart, but you just wait. And when you wait, it doesn't mean that there won't be another time coming. It just means that the time between then and now is going to be more painful and more chaotic and more costly than it should be. That there will be a trial and pain and temptation and things that come into your life that are unnecessary that you actually had the power to dismiss themselves. And so we pay for our disobedience. We pay for it in one way or another. And if you don't install now, if you don't step into those things, if you don't invite the change, if you don't invite the restart in your life, it will force itself on you. And the crash is coming. The crash will come. And when it comes, it will be more impactful than it should have been. But there's a good news about crashing. There's a good news about dying. There's a good news about death. Is that God reclaimed what it means. He redefined what it means to die. And he says that death does not have to lead to death. But death, if you will allow it, can lead to life. That death does not have to be the end of you, that death could actually be the beginning of you. And this is the Easter story. This is what it's all about. In John 12, 24, it says, I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it. But the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. See, what the scriptures are teaching us, what Jesus embodies and shows us, is that our death, our crash, our thing that we thought ruined us could actually be the environment for new life to spring up from the ground. Even if you didn't choose it, even if you made the mistake and you said, remind me later, remind me later, remind me later, remind me later, and all of a sudden it led to your crash. And you go, I knew it. You know what's the worst thing? When someone tells you, I told you so. That's the worst thing when someone's like, I told you so. But you know what's worse than that? You know what's worse than I told you so? I knew it. I knew it. But even when you missed it, it isn't too late. Even when you missed it, it's not too late, because your death can lead to life. Your death could be the beginning of something new. When a kernel falls to the ground, it springs up as something new. When that thing that was dead and not producing anything falls into the ground and dies, from it can spring up new life. And what the scriptures say, if you love your life, you'll lose it. But if you hate your life in this world, that's the qualifier of this passage. If you love your life in this world, in this state, in this reality, it will lead to your demise. See, this isn't a passage saying don't love your life. You should love your life. But you should only love your life if you actually are living. See, because we exist in so many different ways. We exist in this world, in this state, in this thing, and we love it so much that we keep it, that we hold it, that we won't want to let it go. But as long as we love that thing that we have and not the thing that we can have, this life abundant, this true life, then we will never truly live. And this is what Easter is all about. I know that it's difficult to comprehend and understand life after death, because we just don't see it all the time. And if we do, it's kind of weird. And I will be honest, I work as a fireman, and our job is to save lives. And we often don't. We fail at it a lot. But when we do, it's the craziest thing. When someone's dead, like clinically dead, and we do CPR and they come back to life, it's creepy. It's weird, life after death. We don't see it all the time, but the crazy thing is this is not a new narrative that the writers in the scriptures are talking about. This is not a new poetic piece that Jesus is writing with his life. He's actually showing us something that's embedded into the fabric of all existence, into the fabric of all humanity. When a kernel hits the ground, it dies and sprouts up new life. Our bodies are representative of this. Your body is constantly being renewed, which means you are flaking your skin off onto each other all the time. Every 7 years, our bodies are completely renewed. That we are constantly dying and being raised again. Our cells are dying and being reborn. We are new existences ourselves. That all throughout the fabric of creation, all of our food must die to give us life. Right, it's everywhere. The narrative is everywhere, but we just don't have the eyes to see it. And what Jesus is saying is, I'm ushering something in, this reality that is available not just to remember on an Easter Sunday, but to experience yourself in real life. That if you would die, if you would install now, if you would restart now, that you could actually live life to the fullest, that you might be a seed now, but if it dies and plants into the ground, then you could raise up into new life, that you could be more fruitful and more productive and more creative than you have ever been. You might be able to actually live the life you know you were meant to live. That life that if you missed the mark, you would say, I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. Matthew 16:25 says, for whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever wants to lose his life for me will find it. And this is the great dilemma of what Jesus came to do. The scriptures say that Jesus came and died and conquered death and was risen to life so that we too could live, that we could have abundant life, eternal life, that in fact we would never have to die because we would live forever in eternity. That's the good news. But the problem is so many times Jesus is trying to give us something we already think we have. Jesus has come to give us life, and you already think you're living. And this is where we get confused. I love this quote by Stephen Hawking. It says, "The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance, is the illusion of knowledge." The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance, it is the illusion of knowledge. It isn't just about the reminder coming or the good news coming your way or the thing saying, here's your chance. The knowledge of that is actually good. The ignorance of it is not your excuse. The difficulty is when you think you're already living. When you think that this chaotic, messy, unsatisfied life is all that you can have. And you equate that to life. And here's the interesting thing about life. Life is not this product that God can give us. We'll look for it all the time. Self-help books. We'll go to the biggest aisle in the bookstore. We want this product to make our life better. It isn't that. Life is not a medication that we can take that can heal us. Life is not about this personal thing that we can maybe find along the way. Life is not a principle that we can get through this religion or through that religion. Life is not a philosophy. Life is a person, and his name is Jesus. Jesus in John 11, 25 says, I am the resurrection and the life. And he who believes in me will live even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. See, the problem is that we go looking for life in all of the wrong ways and in all of the wrong places because we think life is a thing that we can get. When in reality, life is a person that we can have a relationship with. And his name is Jesus. And he says it and declares it himself. I am the resurrection and the life. And if you would know me, if you would install this update now, you can experience it too. But I love this passage. It puts into order a sequence of things that we often mess up. It says, whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Is it possible that you could actually live in Jesus before you believed in Jesus? See, typically we mix that up. You got to believe in Jesus. You got to understand him, comprehend him, go to school, get your MDiv. Do whatever you got to do to understand the nature of God. You got to believe it all, comprehend it, understand it. But no, the scriptures say, whoever lives in him and believes in him will never die. And I love when that little restart thing comes up on my computer and it says install now or restart or try me later. There's another button that says more info. And if I click that more info tab to try to get it to prove to me how it's going to make my life better, and I try to read through that script of stuff, I cannot comprehend it. I do not know what it is telling me. You got a bug here, you got a bug there, this is broken, that's broken. I don't know what any of that language means. I can't comprehend it. And so many times we'll try to come to the Bible or come to a place and try to comprehend who God is. If I could just understand him and figure him out, then maybe I'll put my faith in him. But no, the scripture said if you would live in him and believe in him, that you would never die. It is possible. 1 Corinthians 2:14 says, but people who aren't spiritual can't receive these truths from God's Spirit. It all sounds foolish to them, and they can't understand it, for only those who are spiritual can understand what the Spirit means. Is this morning your chance to put aside all of your calculated comprehension of who God is and what he did And instead of saying, I'll install later once I have it figured out, just saying, I'm in. Just install now. I don't quite get it, but I know I need it. I know.
You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.